I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is Politics Unpacked. Politics Unpacked is sponsored by Future 42, making Washington a place for all to prosper. Sign up for their newsletter at future42.org. Welcome to Politics Unpacked, week one. I'm Brandi Cruz. Politics Unpacked is our weekly legislative update show where I keep my opinions to myself and I just tell you what you need to know about the legislative session and the happenings that week. So as the legislative session gets underway, the first thing that you need to know is this is a long session. The legislature has long sessions and short sessions. The long sessions are 105 days. So it gives them more time to get down to business. One of the big tasks ahead of them is, of course, balancing the budget. Washington State is facing a $14 billion budget deficit. And the question is, what combination of cuts or new revenue are lawmakers going to agree upon in order to move forward? But first things first, Washington State has a new governor. After 12 years, Governor Jay Inslee gave his final speech to the legislature this week.
Washington values make us a place of refuge and opportunity in an unstable world. And we inspire a nation.
Inslee also made a parting remark about incoming President Donald Trump.
Our state will work with anyone on policies that are positive for Washington. But we will not bend the knee to a would-be authoritarian's worst impulses.
After that remark, several Republican lawmakers, including State Representative Chris Corey and State Representative Jim Walsh, left the floor. Of course, with Governor Jay Inslee leaving, that means we have a new governor. Bob Ferguson was sworn in this week. Ferguson delivered his first address to the legislature, striking a bipartisan tone.
Let us listen to one another without consideration for party so that the strongest argument prevails. That is how we do our best work.
Meanwhile, Governor Ferguson also made it very clear to lawmakers on both sides how he intends to handle the budget deficit.
We should have an open and honest dialogue about how we arrived at this shortfall and what lessons we must learn. Let us work together to ensure that we correct some of the actions that brought us here. But let me start by saying that the era of assuming unrealistic growth in revenue is over. To be specific, I will not sign a budget that requires unrealistic revenue growth to balance. Moreover, I will veto policy bills that defer major spending obligations more than 4 years after the legislation is adopted. These bills violate the spirit of Washington's requirement that state budgets be balanced over a four-year period.
After the speech, Republican leaders spoke and said they're hopeful that the new governor means what he says.
I was writing down notes, and I was honestly confused because I was waiting to find something that I would really be upset about. But no, we're here to help, right? These are really good, bold ideas that we've been talking about for a long time. And I think for us, we're here to help, and we're here to work with him where we can. The real test for him, I think, is going to be his ability to work with the Democrat majorities in the House and Senate.
I do want to note that in his first day in office, Bob Ferguson did sign three executive orders. One of them has to do with abortion.
Directing the Department of Health to convene a roundtable of medical providers, reproductive health experts, and policymakers to recommend strategies for protecting reproductive freedom.
Abortion access has been protected in Washington State since the 1970s. The other two executive orders signed by Ferguson have to do with permitting and licensing.
We must make it easier, faster, and less expensive to build housing of all kinds. The times call for action, and that is why I'm signing an executive order immediately following this speech, directing state agencies to review all regulations that impact housing, permitting, and construction, and identify any provision that can be streamlined, deferred, or eliminated. This issue is critical.
On the budget front, while Bob Ferguson is signaling that he's more focused on cuts before he's focused on new revenue, Democrats in the House dropped three new tax bills, including House Bill 1320, which would increase B&O taxes, and House Bill 1334, which would raise the property tax levy lid. That means that a county like King County, for example, could raise your property taxes at a rate of up to 3% without going to a vote of the people. And finally, Democrats introduced their much-anticipated wealth tax. House Bill 1319 places a 1% tax on worldwide wealth above $100 million. There have been critics of the proposal on both sides of the aisle who've said it would be difficult, if not impossible, to implement, and also say that it would ultimately hurt Washington's economy. For his part, Governor Ferguson said he's skeptical of the wealth tax.
Could you support either the wealth tax or the Jumpstart-style tax?
Yes, I mean, again, I'm just not focused on that. I did place in the document that you're going to see here that's literally, I think, being released now, I do have a quote in there, right, a comment on the wealth tax. And the reason I put a comment on that is because it is obviously central to the proposed budget, right? So I just felt that was important to say something about that. And you'll have to find the exact words, but I think I express deep skepticism of the wealth tax.
Let's talk about a few bills that gained traction on the first week of the session. First, rent control. House Bill 1217 got a hearing on the very first day of the session.
There's clear agreement that housing supply is a foundational issue in Washington's housing crisis. Consumer protection policies like rent stabilization do not increase housing supply, and if adopted, should not result in Washington becoming less competitive than Oregon, California, and other neighboring states for housing investment.
Housing providers wearing matching t-shirts packed the hearing room and also some overflow rooms. Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington says he's disappointed that the hearing started late and more housing providers didn't get a chance to speak.
It's disheartening when you have to tell citizens who've come to participate in their democracy that it's not going to work because they decided to have the hearing on the first day.
This is not the first time that rent control has come before the legislature. In fact, it was introduced last session and didn't make it across the finish line. This year's bill is sponsored by Representative Emily Alvarado, who spoke during the hearing.
Washingtonians are asking for pragmatic solutions to stop unnecessary and excessive rent increases. That's what this bill does. Washingtonians are asking for our help to rein in unjustifiable costs and make it easier to live, raise a family, and retire with dignity. And that's what this bill does.
There is also some debate over whether passing rent control would be counterproductive to Governor Ferguson's agenda of getting more housing units built in his first term. Another bill getting a lot of attention this week is Senate Bill 5181, introduced by Democratic Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson. It would seek to make some significant changes to the Parental Rights Initiative that was passed into law by the legislature just last year. Initiative 2081 got nearly 500,000 signatures and was sent to the legislature, where they passed it nearly unanimously. The law is intended to make sure that parents know what's happening with their kids at school and that certain things aren't being kept from parents, like medical issues that a child might be talking to a counselor about at school, mental health issues, and things like that. Senator Peterson had said at the end of last session that he was concerned about some of the language in the bill and believes it violates federal privacy laws designed to protect students' medical information, even from their parents. Brian Haywood was the backer of Initiative 2081, and he spoke about his frustrations with the legislative effort to undo it.
I think the mass response has, so it's not just your legislators, you have to reach out to them. But I think what has to happen is enough people besides you. So if you can get five people and those people can get five people, yeah, that will begin to be the thing that changes it.
And that has been week one of Politics Unpacked for the 2025 legislative session. Politics Unpacked is sponsored by our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And make sure you catch our daily show, Undivided, where I give context and give in-depth interviews on some of the bills that we discussed today and others. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.